Hi, and welcome to Culture Unraveled. In this episode, I particularly want to look into the movie Oh My God 2, a very intriguing movie, the way in which it brings out the idea of religion, the idea of a devotee and the one to whom the devotee is devoted to. The premise of the movie starts off with Kanti, who is a devotee, and he is facing a crisis. And the crisis is that his son has been caught in an obscene act in school. And Kanti begins to realize that it is not really his son's fault, that it is an action that people generally do. But he understands that there are certain things that are against him, certain forces that are against him. And he prays for his son's deliverance. And then he is called to take certain actions towards it. So that is the overall premise of the movie. And there are a number of intriguing themes that come out of it. One of the major themes that the movie explores, which we will not be exploring, but I do believe that it is a major theme in the movie, is education in India, social and moral stigma in India. And both of these are connected. The way in which we educate the future generation and the way in which social and moral stigma is understood, particularly in the area of sex. And so that's an important theme that comes out of the movie, and there is an attempt to resolve it at the end. They use the courtroom as a place in which to articulate their ideas, and it's very dialogue heavy, and the courtroom becomes the platform on which these ideas are being brought forward. But what I want to focus on, which I thought was a major theme in the movie, was the relationship between the devotee and the one to whom the devotee is devoted to. Now, I just want to mention a very important caveat here. In comparative religions and in the methods of doing comparative religion, the methodology of doing comparative religion, you're not particularly looking at the object to whom the devotee is devoted to. One might not agree with, one might not even acknowledge the existence of the object to whom one is devoted to. But that is not the person who's doing comparative religion. That is not the person's prerogative. The person's prerogative is to look at it from a bottom-up approach, particularly in this instance, the life of the devotee. To condone or to criticize the one to whom the devotee is devoted to is not the place of the person who's doing the comparative analysis here. And so that's the caveat that I want to bring out. All I'm looking at here is the devotee and certain resonances that are there between any devotee who is given themselves to one to whom they are devoted to. And you see resonances there. You see certain things in Kanti's life as a devotee that shares in the experience of other devotees, other disciples around the world to the one they are devoted to. So that's what I want to particularly look at. And I want to look at three aspects of the devotee that comes out in the movie and particularly in the life of Kanti. And notice it is a bottom-up approach. It is looking just plainly from the viewpoint of the devotee and then applying it in our own life, seeing certain aspects about it which are commendable. Firstly, one of the things that strikes out in Kanti's life is his earnestness and his humility. So Kanti is faced with a situation and the first thing that he goes to is in prayer to God, humbles himself in reverence to God to pull him out of the situation. He is definitely a smart man, given his socioeconomic circumstances. He's a lower middle class person, does not have too much power, does not have too much money. But he has certain amount of intelligence that comes out in this movie. But his earnestness and humility to God in that situation is almost saying, I'm not banking on my intelligence and what I have to come out of this. I need your help, God. Help me in this situation. Deliver me from this situation. And it is not just her coming to God at the time of trouble. Throughout, you see Kanti is an earnest disciple of God, that he is deep in the faith and he comes to him before God. There's a parallel that I, as a devotee or a disciple of Jesus Christ, can see in Mark 12, 41 to 44. So in Mark 12, basically what you see is a poor widow coming to the temple, and Jesus sees this poor widow. And there were other people who come to the temple. They're very rich, very well off, and then they give their money to the temple and they make a big show out of it. But Jesus commends the earnestness of this poor widow who comes and gives all that she has, very little that she has, before God. And what he says is that here is a disciple who's earnest. Here is a disciple who has given everything that they have. And what you see in Kanti is that here is a person who's coming to God with everything that he has and acknowledging that the only way that he can get out of his difficult situation is if God intervenes. So that's the first thing. Second thing that really comes out in, oh my God, in Kanti's life is his faith in God. That Kanti is able to understand that there is a power that transcends human power. He is in a situation where he's against all odds. You know, the authority is much bigger than him. He does not have influence. He does not have money. He cannot help his son in any way. But he does believe that if he comes to God in faith, God, who is all powerful, will be able to bring him out of his situation. That beyond what the tangible realm, that beyond what we can touch and feel, and beyond what you can see in the difficulty of the circumstances and all the powers that are there in the world, is a transcendent supernatural power that can be called into this world to help him out of this situation, that can be manifested. And that is the faith that Kanti has. And this faith expects him as a devotee to do certain extraordinary things. At first, you see, he wants to run away. He wants to catch a train and he wants to run away. And what he understands in and through this is that his calling is to stay and to fight it. And that is a big choice that he has to make. The easier thing would be to run away and escape the situation. But he is pulled by this force to say, no, stay and fight this. Go to the court, ask the people who have wronged his son to pay certain amounts as a token of forgiveness, to make that statement. He does not know the full picture and he is unable to see the complete picture. But he is called in faith to do that and he does it. He believes that this will bring this will help him in this situation. There is a greater purpose to which he is called, and he will act in faith. The one to whom he is devoted to calls him towards that, and he will act in faith. And so that's another huge important aspect that comes out that can be applied across disciplines, across people who are devoted to something. The faith to see it through, the faith to push beyond what you can see and touch and feel and things that is there in the world to something greater. And finally, what the movie very interestingly brings out is the frailty as a disciple. And so you have Kanti here, and you see that he is not a perfect disciple. Yes, he is extraordinary in certain sense, that he has an extraordinary faith. He comes to God in earnestness and humility. But in very ordinary sense, he is human and he is caught up with things in the world. And one of the ways in which the movie brings that out is when the people in power, that is the school headmaster and the high priest and things like that, when they understand that they are losing the case, they call Kanti into the room and says that they will give him 1 crore. They will give him this money in order for him to shut this case and then go off. And so here is the situation, and Kanti is there and he believes, and this check is there in his hand, something he can touch and feel, and something that he feels will bring him that liberation by which he will be able to educate his son, that his family will be able to come out of their poverty in and through all of this. So here he is faced in a moment of weakness where things of this world, things he can touch and feel, are somehow greater than his faith. And he, at that time, at least he perceives that to be true, and he gives into it. And you see a frailty of the disciple here. Again, you can see parallels in the Gospel of Matthew 14, when Peter walks on water and Christ calls him and he's walking on water, and he has that faith as long as he sees his Messiah, the God to whom he has given himself to. But suddenly when he looks around and he sees that sees the things in this world. He sees the storm and he sees the difficulty that is there. He immediately sinks in. And Christ calls him and he brings him up. And even in this situation, through a miraculous intervention, in this case, a particular accident that he goes to, Kranti understands that he has done something very deeply wrong here, that he has relegated his faith of the supernatural, of the transcendent, for something material, for something in this world. And he comes to God again in humility, comes to God in earnestness, and asks him for faith. He pulls back, calls on his faith, begs for forgiveness, and moves on his call, takes the difficult journey of going back to the court and presenting his case. And what you interestingly see through the movie is that in and through his faith, you see liberation all around. You see a change in mentality all around. You see transformation happening in areas that are much greater than his family or even his locality. So those are things that very strongly come out of this movie. His earnestness and humility before God. The faith that he has that there is a power that is transcendent that can guide him in the material world, in the things of this world, in the everyday life. And finally, his frailty as a disciple, his very humanness as a disciple, but how through grace he is able to come out. I want to end with this quote by Thomas Merton, who is a Trappist monk, Catholic monk, and this is what he says. Discipleship is not limited to what you can understand. It must transcend all comprehension. Plunge into the deep waters beyond your own comprehension, and I will help you to comprehend, even as I do. Bewilderment is the true comprehension. Not to know where you are going is the true knowledge.